from stpetecatalyst.com.
Joining me on Impact Catalyst is the co-founder of Project Dynamo, Brian Stern. Welcome, sir.
Thanks for having me, Joe. I appreciate it.
So you're kind of, from what I'm hearing, you're kind of like a real life action hero.
I don't know about all that. I lead Project Dynamo, and we do hard target rescues in denied areas where the U.S. government isn't present. So we have a lot of fun, and it's action oriented, but I don't know about all that.
Pretty much sounds like an action hero to me. So let's dig into that a little bit. So, you know, you're helping getting people out of places. I mean, it's an amazing organization, completely donor funded, doing this all. I mean, you've had an incredible experience, Purple Heart, Special Forces, intelligence community. You could be doing some pretty lucrative stuff in the private sector. You've chosen to dedicate your time to this really important project. Let's kind of to dig in what that looks like. So your hard target rescue in gray areas. What are some examples of that?
So we've done all kinds of stuff. We've done everything. From busloads of people from Russian occupied Ukraine to landing airplanes the second week that the Taliban took control in Afghanistan. We rescued 117 Americans in one day. In September 2021, we've broken people out of jail that were charged with espionage, all kinds of stuff. We've rescued 68 American babies under the age of a month old. We rescued a set of American babies that were being held inside Russia and got them out on a long story, all kinds of stuff. But the reality is I've been serving, our people and the nation for my entire life. One way or the other, I'm a servant of the people, right? And that's kind of how I'm wired. It's kind of how I'm built. When we say, don't leave a man behind, that means something to me. When we say, I'll get you out, that means something to me. And, in not even 2 years, we've been able to rescue 6,000 people. Pretty amazing. And, we're a little bit different because there's a lot of, groups out there that are doing good work. They're trying to help these different things. We started in Afghanistan and then expanded to Ukraine. We didn't pivot to Ukraine. We expanded, and now we're looking at things. And then into Russia, and then again still doing hurricane stuff, and likely in the future China, Taiwan. But it's a real labor of love at the same time,
So let's start with how do you find out about these opportunities? How do you know and how do you get the intel and know who needs rescued, how to get there, and what you're going to need to make that mission successful?
A few different ways. We've had cases where the family were contacted, where the person who is missing or stuck, their family calls the State Department, and the State Department says, call the FBI. And then they meet with the FBI, and the FBI says, we can't help you. And they say, call Project Dynamo, right? That's one way. Other ways are through just word of mouth. We've kind of been doing this a long time, and we're on the ground doing it. So unlike other groups, we're actually there. We're I go to Afghanistan, I go to Ukraine, we go to these places and are doing the operation. So I don't know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy who happens to have a building that we're going to call a safe house, right? Every safe house I've used the plumbing in it myself, right? So it's different. So through that process, the word gets around, and when people are desperate, they get pretty resourceful and pretty creative because they're scared to death.
And you talk about there's some logistical elements to it, but when you get there, you mentioned the jailbreak. So, you are actually in there, in combat situations or dangerous situations, situations that can escalate. So, how does your team work? You have a core group of folks that you work with, and, obviously it varies by situation, how much prep time is there, and it seems like a lot of times you have to be in and out pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the operation. In Afghanistan, we have two flavors. One's called Nomad, one's called Slingshot. Nomad are cross-border operations by land. Slingshot are air operations by air, either charter or commercial or what have you. In Ukraine, we've got a lot of different flavors. We've got Gemini, which is our baby program, Apollo, which are humanitarian convoys, all from occupied areas. We're not a bus service. We're a rescue organization. So if you're all the way out west in Lviv and you're trying to get to Poland, that's not us. You take an Uber. Because when I'm in Lviv and I need to get to Poland, that's what I do. We work in the Badlands. We work on the front lines or across the front lines. So our more specialized operations, what we call Orions, are very complicated. No two are the same. There's no recipe. There's no cookie cutter cookbook for them. And sometimes they're days long and sometimes they're months long to get people out of captivity.
And why is there a need for Project Dynamo? You know, obviously you mentioned gray areas. There's, you know, a lot of rules around engagement with the U.S. and foreign countries. Can you kind of talk about the framework that leaves these gaps that we need to fill?
The gray space is very easy to understand, and that's what we call the operating environment that we work in. The gray space is very simple. We work where the U.S. government isn't, either because they left, like Afghanistan, or until they get there, like Hurricane Ian. We were first in the water during Hurricane Ian. We beat the Coast Guard, right? Or if they're never going to come at all, like Ukraine. Or if the relationship is so bad where it may not be a war zone and there may be an embassy presence, but the relationship is so toxic, it doesn't work. And that's Russia, right? So where the government can't function is where I function with ease. Everywhere I go, I'm the only American, right? Everywhere, there's no embassy where I work. So there's no ambassador to get angry or some colonel somewhere that wants to become a general and has an opinion about, you know, the operational risk management assessment is, you know, a 26 and 25 is our threshold. So sorry, denied. We're able to do things that the government, for whatever reason, doesn't do because they can't, won't, should, shouldn't, you know, whatever it is. And for us, it's very simple. If you're an American and you're in trouble and I can get to you, and you need help, we come for you. That's the way it's supposed to be.
I hear you. So, you know, with that, then, you know, if there are these diplomatic restraints that the country has, the U.S. has, you know, does that affect your relationship with the government? Obviously, you would be very useful for them. I'm sure there's plenty of folks in the military who would be frustrated by some of those restraints. That would be grateful that you can go in and do what they can. But, you know, as far as officially, for all those diplomatic reasons, is there any kind of sort of firewall you have to keep between you and the government, or are you able to work with the U.S. government?
I'm able to work with anyone I please. They choose generally not to work with us. It's the other way around. So we keep our government friends informed of many of our operations, especially for the more delicate ones, and we let them know what's going on for no other reason other than I don't want to get in the way of anything. If state is going to do something or CIA is going to do something or a SEAL platoon is going to come in and go shoot up a bunch of people and rescue somebody, I don't want to be in the way of that. And they're a better resource than I am anyway. I'm donor funded. We work on a shoestring budget. ProjectDynamo.org is our website. That's where you can go to. That's where your viewers can go to donate. The executive branch of government has trillions of dollars. They, you know, so if I'm working on a case and they say, hey, we got this, I'm very happy to say, awesome, I'll move on, no problem. But they, so far, never say that, so far.
So, I mean, I don't even know how you would operate something like this on a shoestring budget, excuse me. I mean, just, you know, the capital to get people and equipment in and out of places and, you know, how do you... I guess I should say, does money ever stop you from being able to save people?
Absolutely. My number one restriction right now is funding. We've got our demand signal is increasing, not decreasing. We get asked for help by people every day. In fact, as I'm talking to you, I just got a thing for a green card holder who has been in Afghanistan since July 2021, needs help. Two children, two have been murdered. So he had four, now he has two. That's just incidentally, he just came up just now. So that's 2 years of hiding. That's a really long time.
That is a long time. And so then now you go into a triage of, is this something you can do based on the other things you're doing and your resources? And really, that's what it comes down to, is you could do more if you had more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's the only limiting factor that I really have, other than getting access to some folks. But money, you know, sources don't pay for themselves. Buses don't pay for themselves. Airplanes don't pay for themselves. Intelligence doesn't magically pay for itself. I can't get a Russian intelligence officer to commit high treason because I'm a nice guy. That doesn't work. Yeah, there are parts of Ukraine you can't find toilet paper, you know, so it's pretty dicey.
So what does the average Project Dynamo supporter look like? You know, who are you reaching, and who is contributing and supporting you? Who are the types of people who get the need for this?
Overwhelmingly patriotic Americans. We are not political. This is not a Republican thing. This is not a Democrat thing. This is an American thing. We are completely not political. You'll never hear me on TV talking about any president, current, past, present, future. That's not what this is about. I have on my team, I have people who are MAGA hat wearing, you know, diehard Trump folks. And I also have people who have Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders for president bumper stickers on their car, and they work together every single day. That's what Dynamo really is. It really is the best part of America. We show what America and American values, frankly, should and could be and are, right? I have people from different backgrounds, all walks of life. Short, tall, fat, skinny, gay, straight, Army, Navy, Air Force, and Coast Guard all working together, right? That never happens. Republicans, Democrats, all working for the same exact reason, because these people, my team, believes that if your passport says "We the People" on it and you're in trouble, someone comes for you. That's not a political talking point for any agenda other than Americans. Americans like to fight. It's in our nature. It's part of us. It's part of our culture. We're founded on being a little rebellious and even obnoxious, if you talk to the British, right? That's kind of what we're founded on. When our people are in trouble, we don't watch it on TV. We don't. And we damn well don't watch it on TV if the government's not going to help. We definitely don't do that. That's what Dynamo is all about.
So as Dynamo has grown and is growing, what does the trajectory look like? You know, if you continue and can find the funding, you know, what is your full realized vision for Project Dynamo in sort of scope and effectiveness?
Well, it's a good question. Really and truly, I hope that the situation changes where the policies and the execution of those policies change such that Dynamo doesn't need to exist. That's really what I hope for. I hope, and you know, Plato said nobody desires peace more than a soldier, because he pays the highest price in war. Plato was wrong. The people that pay the highest price in war are the innocent civilians stuck in the middle of it, while the politicians are outwording each other and the soldiers are out killing each other. The innocent civilians and the women and children that are stuck in the middle of artillery and missiles and rape and war crimes and bombs and torture and who knows what else, those are the people that really pay the highest price in war. I pray for the day where there is no war anywhere. You know, when Miss America gets up there, they all say, I hope for world peace. Well, when I say that, I mean it. I really do. But the reality is, We're not there. That's not happening. The world is becoming more dangerous, especially for Americans. Our status in the world is decreasing, not increasing. Our credibility as it relates to our word is decreasing, not increasing. We just backstabbed a couple hundred thousand people that fought side by side with us for 20 years. Who in their right mind would ever want to fight next to us ever again? Why would you do that to yourself? You know what I mean? So then we say Ukraine, where, you know, not only are we not helping our friends, we're leaving our own people behind enemy lines, not helping. How do you explain that?
So when you talk about peace and you talk about policy change, can you dig into that a little bit as far as, you know, what policies you think are the most problematic and what you'd like to change?
Well, right now, you know, the lead story on so many things, you know, when it comes to this with respect to geopolitics is China and Taiwan, right? That's like the, you know, guys like me have been talking about this for years, but now it's becoming a little mainstream. And the idea of President Xi annexing or you know, reunifying Taiwan with mainland China has the potential to be catastrophic for America and the world economically, right? So if we say that we're not going to get involved in a kinetic fight, because when was the last time the U.S. Navy launched a torpedo, right? So that's a tough war to fight and win. Very difficult, very bloody, very costly. China can take Taiwan whenever they want, as they've demonstrated over and over and over again as recent as this week. They may not do it graceful today, but they could do it today and get it. They would get the job done, maybe not so graceful. Well, if that's bad for the world because of sea lanes, because of economy, because of all those issues, well, and we're not really in a position to fight it, well, then the only real answer is to deter it in such a way that President Xi doesn't do it. Now, President Xi campaigned on this issue, and he's a politician like every other politician. He has to answer to people. He's not holier than thou. If President Xi got on TV and said, you know, I've been wrong about this whole Taiwan thing, let's just let them live, he'd be out of office tomorrow, right? So we need to create a circumstance where that war is deterred. The best way to do that is a humiliating defeat of Russia. China can't afford to be what has become Russia. They can't. The last time China had that kind of problem was in Hong Kong, and they hosed the people down. The one before that was Tiananmen Square, where they ran them over with tanks. They can't afford to be embarrassed on the world stage. No way. So how do you prevent President Xi from doing Taiwan? A humiliating defeat of Russia is the best way. And then we say, okay, well, we're doing that, right? We're giving the Ukrainians weapons. Yes and no. In the U.S. Army Field Manual, Operations Manual, right, when it talks about integrated fires, meaning ground and air, it says right in there, don't do tank warfare without air superiority, because tanks are allergic to aircraft. Well, we just gave Ukraine a whole bunch of tanks, and we're all excited about that, but we still don't give them airplanes. So let me understand this right. We're violating our own protocols on how to use tanks? And then we're going to be mystified and stunned as to why it doesn't work too well and why they're getting killed so bad. Maybe we should give them what they need and ask for. And maybe even still, maybe we should get even more involved. Imagine if Ukrainian grandmas are holding the Russian army at bay. Imagine what, I don't know, the F-35 would do or the 82nd Airborne Division would do. I'm not saying that we should go to war and go boots on ground, but I tell you what, the Russians, They're scared to death right now. They're getting schwacked pretty good with Ukrainian grandmas with missile launchers. Tell you what, maybe we should commit a little bit more. Maybe. And end this war quickly.
Why do you think that's not happening?
I think that there's not an appetite for it. I think there's not an appetite for it. Ukraine's not part of NATO. President Biden, I think, has a hard time justifying it. I think that the American people don't have an appetite for it. I do. And I think it's just inconsistent with where we are as a country and in the world right now. And I understand that, and that's okay. I'm not suggesting that we should go to war, we should do this, or we should do that. But if we're gonna say China, Taiwan, there is a relationship, there's a causal relationship between Ukraine, Russia, the Ukraine-Russia war, and the China-Taiwan war that's very likely to happen. Very likely, you know?
I do want to bring it back a little bit to our local area. You are based out of Tampa Bay. Can you talk a little bit about how that happened?
My last active duty assignment was in Florida, at MacDill Air Force Base, and I kind of fell in love with Tampa. My father, before he died, was living not too far from Tampa, and it just seemed like the right kind of, you know, good weather, good food, you know, no taxes. What's not to like? Lots of skydiving, you know. Good people, good stuff, fairly normal people, not too crazy one way or the other, or this way or that way, which is nice. I'm a very centrist kind of a person. So, I kind of fell in love with Tampa a little bit, and I lived in Harbor Island for a while, and then I moved out. I wanted a bigger house with a pool.
And how many other folks from your organization are local? I mean, I'm assuming they're mostly globally distributed. Do you have a team that's here locally?
Yeah, I got about 10 folks that are Tampa based, and then everyone else is all over the place.
Well, I'd love to hear, finish up with one story, something that was either your most harrowing or most rewarding, mission that you went on. What comes to mind?
It's difficult because we do these ourselves. So of the 6,000 people that we've rescued, 5,500 of their names are on my cell phone right now. And they're all special. They really are. We rescued Kirill Alexandrov, who was arrested by the Russians, charged with 11 counts of espionage. He's the first American victim of war crimes that's alive since World War II. He was tortured and beaten and mock executions and the whole bit. And his wife, and brutalized in a very, very, very real way for 37 days. We broke him out of captivity. I got him, his wife, and her mother out of captivity after 37 days of trying, right? Pretty awesome. And the Russians didn't, to this day, the Russians don't know how I did it, to this day. He wasn't released. We took him. He's an escaped fugitive as we speak, right? And he's a wonderful, wonderful guy from Detroit. At the same time, there were two American kids that were stuck in a Russian state-run orphanage in St. Petersburg, Russia. And they were born September the 5th. We got them out Thanksgiving week. State Department and CIA and the government tried for almost 90 days to get them out, and they couldn't do it. We planned for 11 days, initiated operations on Tuesday before Thanksgiving. And 13 hours later, they celebrated Thanksgiving as a family, the mother and father. Right. So, what's fun about the, none of these things are good stories. It's like insurance. Nobody wakes up and wants to call Project Dynamo. If you're calling me, you or your family are in a very bad place, right? But I try, at the same time, it's incredibly rewarding to be able to help people that should be getting help and aren't.
Yeah, I mean, not, whether they want to or not, that they can call you is such an incredible resource. And, the depth with which the patriotism or the vigor with which it flows through you is incredible, and that you've given up other paths to take this path and build this organization is just amazing, and it can see what it means to you and on all fronts, and I hope whatever we can do with this little program of ours to get you some more support, I certainly hope that happens. It's just really great.
I appreciate it. The best way to help us is to help us with fundraising and awareness. ProjectDynamo.org. We got credit cards and wire, and we take every kind of thing you can do. And then also on social media, I use that to kind of punch the bad guys in the face a little bit. So follow us on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn and all that stuff. I don't know how to do any of it. I have somebody who does it for me. But some of our videos and pictures are... some of our pictures and videos and that imagery are really, really, really telling and current and even sometimes really funny. So I'd encourage your listeners to go there too.
Brilliant. Brian Stern, Project Dynamo, thank you so much for sharing your story, and good luck on your travels, and stay safe.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
From stpcatalyst.com.